Here we go. Okay.
Torrance Lytle Homecoming Parade was a big event because we would play the homecoming game in Davidson Stadium, where we had just had maybe one set of bleachers at Torrance Lytle, and the opposing team people and the home people had to sit in the same benches. But that was a big event, and the parade would start at Ada Jenkins, and we would go down the hill and up Depot Street, you know, and then across the street to the college, to the stadium. That was fun. That was the only parade that we had. I can't remember if they were really having, white people were having parades in Davidson. When I think of white parades, the only thing I can remember is the Carousel Parade in Charlotte that we would all go to. But there was very little mingling of the races at that time, except in employer-employee roles. A lot of black boys talk about feeling comfortable to go on the Davidson College's campus, but I was always told, if I went on campus, if I was going to a concert in the Fine Arts Building, I was taken straight there. You were there in the back for the concert, and then you leave. And I found when I came there as an employee in 1985, first 6 months that I was there, I would never leave my office unless I had a reason. It's like if I had to take something over the payroll in Chambers, then I would leave my office, I'd go straight there, and I'd come straight back. But Gothier and other boys that I've heard talk act like, you know, they were on campus playing just like the white kids in Davidson. But that was not my experience. I never felt welcome. In fact, it was painful for me to go on campus because my dad was a janitor in the chemistry building. But they used him as a graduate assistant because at that time, Pop's mind was such that if he watched you do something one time, then he could repeat it. And so when professors wanted to go play golf on Wednesday, they would schedule a test, give him the, he would become a monitor. If they had labs, they would give him the information. He would set up and conduct the lab because I thought it was interesting. He was the stockroom clerk. And when I came back in 85 and started Love Learning program in 87, the woman that was running the stockroom, because my kids had chemistry classes, was working on her PhD. And I'm thinking, here you got a high school graduate doing this. You know, years ago, and you hire a person with almost a PhD to do it now. But a lot of Davidson alums who didn't end up Presbyterian ministers that became chemists and doctors have him to thank for it, because it was nothing for us to hear our doorbell ring at 2 a.m. in the morning, and it would be some Davidson College student wanting to go in the lab and work on something. It seemed like organic chemistry was the determiner whether you'd be a doctor or a Presbyterian minister. And as you know, they had a lot of Presbyterian ministers come out of there. But those favors that he did for students while they were there, to me, they paid off in the long run. My baby sister was honored with the presence of the governor of North Carolina at her wedding because my dad had helped him when he was a student. We were able to purchase our house, which only cost them $2,000 when they bought that building in 1960, which had been built in 1949. He went to the college just like Mr. Dees, got some financial help for his children to go to college. He went to get to try and get help for me, couldn't get it. Went to try and get money for to buy the house, but it was when he approached the parents of students that he had helped that he was able to get certain things. Just like finding out that each of the 8 times he had taken the United States Postal test to work as a postal clerk. He had passed, but it was told that he had failed. Like my uncle Harold was Harold Beecher Houston was hired and working in an administrative position at the post office before Pop was ever hired. And he was the one that clued Pop into the fact that, no, you're not dumb. You've passed the test every time. But everywhere I see your name, I see a black dot before it. And he said, that's a code for this is a black. And it seemed to be whoever was postmaster in Davidson, they kept making sure he was told that he was didn't make it. Because if he had been hired during that time, he'd have been here in Davidson.
So did he ended up working in the post office system?
When I was a sophomore at Howard, which was 1968 to 69, he finally left the college after having been there 20 years, coming in 49, and went to the post office, at the airport.
Down the airport, okay.
Yeah, so he ended up having to drive 60 miles or more round trip because a lot of that was before I-77. It was number 21 and 15. That's a lot of wear and tear on your car on you. But the college in that way helped out a lot. And I would assume and feel pretty certain that was why when black students said that they were declaring Davidson an unhealthy environment for African Americans or blacks students and demanded certain things, one of which was the hiring of a minister whose religious experience was more in line with theirs. It's how I got the job, because when I was hired in December of 85, Davidson needed a chaplain about as much as I need three more holes in my ear, you know. They didn't need one, but my hiring was to meet that criteria, which to me was a joke because they said a minister that reflected their history and culture. Well, Presbyterianism isn't a part of our history and culture. Now, if I'd been Baptist, it made a lot of sense, but Presbyterian, no. But anyway, I was hired and supposedly working toward increasing the number of faculty and students of color at Davidson. I remember my mother getting a lot of flack. Well, not so much my mother as her employers. She worked not only at Reese Brothers Mill in Canillas. She was maid for George and can't remember Miss Crawford's first name, George Crawford and his wife. She worked for them for years and was the highest paid maid in Davidson. And I think being the highest paid maid meant she worked 40 hours a week for $35. And a lot of people complained to the Crawfords, but the Crawfords were, well, they weren't really from the, they weren't really Yankees. I mean, they were from Virginia. But they had a sense of equality that not many whites here at that time had. So they believed in paying, you know, a fair wage for a fair day's work. But she worked at the mill for the Crawfords, and then they started, I think it was Mrs. Salestead, started a preschool in her basement for white kids, and Debbie worked with her, and then they got moved to Davidson College Presbyterian Church, and then eventually they were moved to the daycare center over here on Gamble Street. But Debbie wasn't working for them when they went there. But that was the type of work. Trying to think. As far as businesses, the only black business I saw before I went to college were the two Norton, the barbershops. And Ralph's was on the corner where the college bookstore is now. And Hood's was further down in the middle of the street. Oh, and the shoe repairman, Mr. McKissick, who I think became a minister eventually. He ran a shoe shop, shoe repair, that was right maybe one door, two doors down from the soda shop. those were the only black faces you saw on Main Street prior to 5 o'clock. At 5 o'clock, you saw black faces for the first time going in buildings to clean. Mm. But prior to that, you didn't see black people. In fact, the only time you might see black people on Main Street was on Sunday, when teenagers especially were like just walking. Mm. It was, you walk uptown, you walk back, because any of the stores we went into, we were not very warmly treated. Hurry up and get them out of here, watch them real close. And somewhere you could get food in the back, or somebody tried to tell me, but I don't remember this. There was somewhere here you stuck your hand in a hole in the wall.
Yeah, I haven't heard that one. Yeah,
yeah, and I don't remember that, but I do remember getting carryouts. Mm-hmm. And today, because I prefer to eat in front of the television, the computer, I should say, I quite often get carryouts, not because I can't go into the restaurant and sit down and eat, but nobody, I don't, can't always treat somebody else. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you're really not in there that often. Mm-hmm. But it was interesting growing up here. I think it would have been more desolate if it hadn't been for the college, because what cultural, educational opportunities, really more of them came from the college. Because Charlotte was 25 miles south, and you just didn't waste gas or have gas to go there. Bus was not any better too much than it is now. I can remember my uncle taking me to Charlotte when I was little on the bus. We get a Greyhound bus up there in front of the drugstore, which is now Kindred, and go to Charlotte, and then it's like you would leave maybe 6 or 7 in the morning. You don't get back until
Well, when you were going to Ada Jenkins, what kind of stuff did you have other than class? Did you have any kind of extracurricular things?
Oh yeah, we used to
clubs.
We had 4-H clubs. We had 4-H club. We had glee club, choir, drama. Drama was a big thing. Every year, every spring, we put on a play. Every Halloween, the church and the school would come together and they'd have a Halloween festival. I can remember bobbing for apples. I remember one Halloween, my grandfather made this roulette wheel. And it wasn't really gambling as much as they got people to donate gifts and things, and they would put them on the numbers on this board, and then they would spin it, and if your number came up, you got to get that prize, pin the tail on the donkey, lots of dancing. We loved to dance. We had sock ops almost every Friday at Ada Jenkins. We had sock ops. They would take us away to things. I can remember... I remember playing with the Charlotte Symphony because of the band and the fact that I had gotten a xylophone, a little small xylophone as a child. I remember playing the larger xylophones with the Charlotte Symphony Orchestra doing the Nutcracker Suite. I also remember band competitions. We had band, and every year there were state competitions. Now in elementary school you didn't go to state competitions, but one year the required piece that there would always be, the school would choose a piece, but the judges would choose a piece for everybody to play. And when I was in the eighth grade, the song they chose was Mozart's Così Fan Tutti, which has a bassoon solo. And Mr. Ledbetter, who was the band director at Ada Jenkins and Torrance Lytle, couldn't get any of the high school kids to even look at a bassoon. And so because I played clarinet, and it's not that much of a switch, he asked me would I be willing to try. And I was like, well, my parents can't afford a bassoon. They're still paying for my clarinet, because I was the only one in the band that was actually purchasing. The rest of them were renting their instruments. he said, well, I will rent you a bassoon if you will learn to play it. I had 6 weeks to learn to play the bassoon and that solo part. My dad, because of, again, chemistry students needing extra help, had a chemistry student who was a bassoon player. So I went to the college and got tutored on the bassoon, and we won state competitions because of that solo. But that gave me an opportunity to visit North Carolina State in Durham, and I fell in love with the campus in the eighth grade, and that was what got me through North. North was very difficult for me because Ada Jenkins was like going to school with your family. That was one thing I carried into Love of Learning. That was the most crucial element that helped our program be successful. Black teachers not only lived in your neighborhood because of segregation, but they developed relationships with you. They became surrogate parents. You did your homework. You tried to excel in every class, not because you had sense enough or maturity enough to know that education is really important, but to please Mr. Fox. Mr. Fox, such a wonderful man. You know, there's no way I'm not going to do his homework. Now, Mr. So-and-so, maybe I might goof on his, but not Mr. Fox. He's really good. Also, we saw our teachers not just in the classroom, but in our community. My mother fixed most of my teachers' hair. Like I said, those who were fortunate to live in the black community, the principal lived in Charlotte, but the first principal at Ada Jenkins lived in Davidson. But the majority of our teachers, well, many of them lived here in Davidson, the rest lived in Charlotte. And it really made a difference. They were concerned. If they noticed that you seemed to show interest or skill in drawing, they would look for art programs and raise money or use their own money to see that you got to go to some special art program in the summer to enhance your talents. It was the same thing at Torrance Lytle. When I went to Torrance Lytle, they had, compared to Ada Jenkins, they had everything. They, we didn't have, they had French club, math club, honor society, drama club. There was a band, the glee club, home ec, vocational aid, all of that. And I remember student government. I remember by 10th grade, my second year at Torrance Lytle, I was president of every organization except for the student council, which I was vice president, because you had to be a senior to be president of the student council. Looking forward to 11th grade oratorical contest, because back then they put a lot of emphasis on memorizing famous people's poetry and work. That was when I got my first taste of black authors. I remember my ninth grade teacher, Mr. Can't remember his name. I know my math teacher was Miss Dozier, and she even took me to like Otis Redding concerts. She was really hip. She young woman. She and Mr. whatever his name is, I'm blanking on it right now. They had just graduated from Johnson C. Smith in Charlotte. I forgot where he was from. She was originally from South Carolina. But that's how I got to see Benny King, all the... She dated a local WGIV disc jockey. So she had free tickets to the concerts and the parties afterwards. And she even invited me in the ninth grade to one of the after parties, but I was too country and scared to go. So I just stayed in her apartment. But... I remember the English teacher turned me on to James Baldwin. And in the ninth grade, I started reading everything that James Baldwin wrote. I even started trying to write like James Baldwin. One of the things about his writing was that James Baldwin would start a paragraph or start a sentence, and it would end a paragraph later with one period. And naturally, that didn't make my English teachers very happy. but I love James Baldwin, and it really helped when we got to the SAT. But the main thing was that they made us, they fed our self-esteem. They built us up. and they made us feel like anything was possible. Even though we were quite aware we were getting secondhand books, like I can remember textbooks that should have been burned. There was so little left, or sometimes the white kids got into writing, hiding racist notes. You know, you might turn a page, hey nigga, dummy. You know, it's like, wow. But it was seldom we got new books. I don't remember new books really until my 10th grade year, when we were 10th graders across North Carolina were guinea pigs for a new textbook. They were looking at combining biology and chemistry. And so instead of having straight biology and cutting up a lot of stuff, we had biochemistry. And I'm really grateful we did, because when I got to Howard, that was my first day. My biology class at Howard, they were using that textbook for the first time. So for me, it was a repeat. So I got an easy A out of that, which was not often at Howard, because I didn't have time to study. It's too much going on campus and in Washington, D.C.
Oh, yeah. Now, you went to, you also ended up at North, right?
Right.
What grade did you go over there?
I chose to go my junior year. Okay. Like, when I was a junior, Ruby Diane Houston, my first cousin, was 10th grade. She and Garfield Card didn't have a choice. They closed it the first year of integration in Mecklenburg County. And I thought this happened all over the county, but found out almost 30 years later, we were the only ones that integrated like this. They closed out the 2nd and the 10th grade in the all-black schools and forced those kids to integrate the white schools. Juniors and seniors were given an option to transfer. Teachers at Torrance Lytle met with us, top of the class, and suggested to us, especially juniors, to go on and transfer to North, because they knew that North, Torrance Lytle would be closed for the class of 67, that the class of 66 would be Torrance Lytle's last class. So you might as well go on and get adjusted. And so I took that option with five other people. But those five other people that went with me didn't choose college prep classes. We were really tracked back then. You had college prep, you had regular, you had vocational. And I would ride a bus from Davidson to North every morning with all black kids. Once we went through that door, it looked like 5 o'clock at an integrated business now, where employees come out, black go one way, white go the other. Well, when we would get off that bus and go into North, black students went that way, I went that way. And so therefore, in most of my classes, I was the only black. I think the most blacks I had in any class was in French, and there were maybe five of us in there. But other than that, I was either completely by myself or one other black would be in the class. And that's probably one of the biggest mistakes integration ever made, to give the look of diversity in classes. You might have three black 10th grade and four 10th grade classes, rather than putting two of them in one and two in the other so you would have some company, you were spread out so it seemed to be more. And that caused me to have severe isolation at North compared to Torrance Lytle, where I knew everybody and everybody knew me. And I was late to class, not because I'm hanging out, making out with my boyfriend or something, but because this teacher wants to talk about some upcoming program and we need you to do this, or we want this to happen. And then you get to North and you're invisible. And people, if you're either invisible or you feel like you're dripping with AIDS, because people see you and run. And to have gone to high school with some of the key people who are in key positions in Davidson now was really funny. The way they were then and the way they present themselves now, and I look at them and I try to give them... Black people have a way of speaking with their face and their eyes, if you know how to understand it. And I have a way of trying to look at them like, motherfucker, you are lying. You may have been, but friendly to the athletes. And that's something I've learned in later years that I didn't know. I thought the athletes had a very smooth transition during integration because they brought winning scores to schools for the first time. But they were harassed as well, just not as obvious and not as much. It was like they became valued because of their skills. But for the others of us, we were either run from or totally ignored. And I think one of the worst things in the world is to be invisible. It's very it's very upsetting. It's very lonely. Or to raise your hand. Be the first to raise your hand and not called on. And if you are called on, everything stops. And you got more pressure because it's totally quiet. Everybody's looking down your throat. You give your answer. And then they go back as though you didn't say anything. Or some of my teachers were real bad. They were really messing with me psychologically. They would just paraphrase or re-say in other words what I just said. But they would do it in such a way that I would be left... Well, what was wrong? That's what I said. You just said it another way. I didn't realize how that was preparing me. Like, there were many times at Davidson, I would be sitting in a meeting, and we were trying to figure something out or do something. And I would say, well, what we need to do is blah, blah, blah. And everybody would stop, and they'd go back. And 2 seconds later, you or another white person would parrot what I had just said. Oh, that's such a wonderful, yes, that's what we need to do. And it was all I could do to keep from, like, using my favorite MF. I just said that. You know, are you damn crazy? Oh, and it got to be real funny when I would meet that occasional Yankee or hip Southerner who would walk out of a meeting with me and get me alone and say, did you notice how everybody talked down to you, not across to you, just always down? And did you notice how you would make suggestions or give solutions and they would be ignored and then somebody else would say to not even change it? And they would go off like they just heard it. And I'm like, oh, you noticed that? Yeah, well, that's what I live with day in and day out. It's getting tiring. What else? But, you know, we didn't have businesses. It was nothing to walk into a store or a business and you be the first customer there. And then a white person comes in and, oh, well, hello, Mr. Fox. How are you? Can I help you today? And you're standing there like... You were waiting on me, or I'm next. There was nobody in here but me, and now he just walked in here. But, you know, you just, you accepted it. But it really has bothered me over the years why I never questioned the separation of schools when I did. And then to find out 30 years after I went through the torment of being at North. Now, unlike Ruby, my cousin, who said they were spit on, I was never spit on. But I would have preferred that to the psychological damage that they did. Because to walk into a cafeteria for a teenager who's already sensitive and adolescent, which is a period in our life where we have a microscopic pimple and we see Mount Everest on our face, to walk into a cafeteria and have everybody get up and four tables in a crowded cafeteria are now empty because people are trying to get away from you. Plus, North used to have us as seniors, you practice for graduation from day one. So whenever we had assemblies in the gym, we would line up and march in. And to look at the gaps, because underclassmen would go in first and we'd have to take the upper bleachers, leaving all of the first three bleachers for the senior class. And when they come in, if there were six black people coming, then about 10 feet back would come the first white students. And then there might be more black students and 10 feet behind them would be some whites. And then you could sit down on Star Spangled Banner when it was played. But when Dixie was played, you better stand up if you didn't want to be expelled. And people say, are you serious? I'm serious.
Oh, yeah.
Dixie was very important. to look at that bigger than life size Confederate soldier every time you went in the gym. Mm-hmm. I was so happy when I heard, I was at North from 65 to 67. In 73, black students burned that soldier out on the parking lot. Mm. I'm so happy to hear that. Mm.
What was the mascot back? Were they Rebels?
Or? Yeah, we were the North High Rebels.
North High Rebels.
And the Confederate
Vikings afterwards. Yeah.
Right, when they burned the soldier.
You probably killed them if they had the name North.
I couldn't understand. That didn't make any sense, especially since we had a South Mech.
Yeah.
South Mech should have been the Rebels and the Confederate. But no, here we are, the North. And it's funny, even to this day, that war is still a point of tension for Southerners and Yankees.
Mm-hmm.
I have a lot of Yankee friends now, and they talk about how people just won't let them forget they are damn Yankee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was talking to somebody the other day. I said, you know, it's kind of interesting how if black folks bring up something about, well, you know, we got the issues still from slavery, and maybe there's something to reparations, and then some white person will say, well, you know, it's time to get over that. You know, that's all been done in the past, and we need to get on with life.
Mm-hmm.
But boy, you bring up the war.
Hey! It's just right like it's still going it. On. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a bone of tension for us.
Yeah. Mm.
But, you know, even with everything that I've experienced, and I think I've experienced a lot racially, I really love the South.
Mm-hmm.
I love many of the traditions of the South. It was just the unjust treatment, and the fact that it continues to today makes my blood boil.
Mm-hmm.
And especially the denial, because mm-hmm. as a psych undergraduate major, I know the first step to dealing with the problem is being able to say, I have a problem. You have to say you're an alcoholic before you can start any type of recovery or get help.
Mm-hmm.
And we won't admit how we are.
Mm-hmm.
There's always been interracial dating. What's funny to me is to look at white people in Davison now and be able to say, there's a coon in the woodshed with that one. Because there are white people here that their black blood, to most Southerners, black or white, because a Southerner can smell an eighth or a fourth of black blood. We know what to look for. You know, we're trained almost like that. But the tensions and the inequality and the things that they do.
Mm-hmm.
And what bothers me most with living here now is that the thinkers, the cream of the crop, most of them have either dumbed down or moved away.
Mm-hmm.
When I got to Howard, I realized just how smart people were here in Davison. You know, as I sit in classes sometimes and I'm struggling, and I thought, Patricia Carr could do this in her sleep. You know, Barbara Stewart could do this with her eyes shut. Marsha Laurie wouldn't even, he'd do it in passing, you know, and the fact that they didn't get the opportunity, that unequal and playing field. And the economic gap. I wish everybody in Davison would read Charles Schauer's 1989 senior thesis for Davison College. He did it on the economic gap between blacks and whites back then.
What year was that?
1989.
Okay.
Mm-hmm, Charles Schauer's. What was the name? Gray Timberlake came maybe 7 or 10 years later and did something similar. But he predicted, and he's been right. The gap has just, what is it, when you go 8, 16, 32, 64, like that, exponentially increased. And how we talk about doing something about it, but we aren't.
Well, I remember, let's see, how long has it been? It's been in the last 6, 7 years anyway, I know. That I was we were working on something at church. Less time than that. Working on something at church, and I got into the local census information. I was trying to learn something about who's in the community and who are we compared to, who's in, all that kind of thing. And I got interested in that stuff. That's the kind of stuff I like. So I remember it dawning on me that the average household income of a white family in, I don't know, 10 years, 5 years ago, was, well, I don't know, I'll say it was $80,000 to $90,000, something like that. And the average for the average black household was $14,000.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, this was after I had been making my journey towards enlightenment a while. And I mean, that just, god damn,
mm-hmm.
that's hard to believe. That it'd be, because then that, what that tells you, well, you got people that are, black folks that are making a reasonably decent income. Well, how about the ones that are not?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you Social Security check about that, B.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know about that firsthand. Yeah. Gotta stop. Yeah. I'm having a nicotine fit.
All right, all right. This might be a good time to take a break anyway.
Yeah. If you want, I can put on some more coffee and not make it quite as strong.
We've covered the bases pretty well.
Yeah, I couldn't, you know, it's hard when you're trying to, it's been so much and I've talked about it so much. Now I'm running scared, mm-hmm. wishing that I have been trying to figure out some way of making extra money.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking about Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
I get $1,182 a month.
Mm.
And other than the $6,000 and some dollar TIA CREP,
mm-hmm.
retirement from the college that I get because Gordon, at the time I was trying to save my house,
mm-hmm.
he set my payment, Gordon Peck set my payments up such that I'm paid in January for the whole year.
Ah.
Rather than again $300 and some a month, I get a $6,000 payoff in January and have to make it on that to the next January.
Mm.
And I've invested so much money in my father's house that when he says, well, this is my house, I say, oh, no, it's not. As much money, did you put an $11,600 roof on this? Are you trying to save now to get your electricity checked? Because I don't think the wiring in that house has been looked at since they first redid it in the 60s.
Now you said the house was built, what, 49?
1949 is a veteran of foreign war building.
Oh, okay.
And then during that time, because it was outside the city limits, fraternities at Davidson, that's where they had their frat parties.
Ah.
They didn't have a Patterson Court.
Yeah.
They wanted to have a drunk out like they have anywhere now. They would come out there. My uncles loved it because white folks, when they get drunk, oh man, they're subject to open a liquor bottle, take one swig out of the clothes and throw it down and not care where they throw it.
Mm.
We have plenty of liquor thanks to them guys. And my uncles could drink. In fact, I come from, except for my grandfather and great-grandmother and my mother and my dad, everybody else was a functional alcoholic. You knew better when you went to